again. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are delighted to have in our studios the new director of the Milwaukee Art Museum, who has just arrived in town and will have a lot to say about her vision of this museum, which has, as you know, undergone this incredible renovation. It's even more beautiful than it ever was, to say nothing of the fact that it's the most beautiful building, I think, in the whole city. So we're going to meet her, which will be a lot of fun. And yesterday, Scotty and KP and I had a chance to go to the museum, and we got a tour, and our tour guide, who is also an expert in American art, is with us in the studio to talk about the Thomas Hart Benton exhibit, which is on display right now and will be for another week and a half or so at the Art Museum. So we'll learn a whole lot about Thomas Hart Benton, who's really worth learning about, an incredible American artist, and the exhibit is terrific. And there's another exhibit there, too, which we didn't have a chance to see, but we will make mention of it. Let us first, though, welcome to town the new director of the Milwaukee Art Museum, Michelle Marcel. Michelle Poletnik is with us, and she comes to Milwaukee from a position as director and chief curator at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Jacksonville. Before that, chief curator at the Monterey Museum of Art. Marcel has a doctorate in art history from the Institute of Fine Arts, New York University, and has curated many exhibitions and authored articles for catalogs and institutions. She's originally from Poland. She's one of these people. How can you know so many languages? She was born in Poland, spent her childhood in Czechoslovakia, Los Angeles, and Deerfield, Illinois. So, of course, she would go into the world of art with such a background. She's a native speaker of Polish and Czech, and she is fluent in Slovak, Spanish, French, and German, and moved to Milwaukee with her husband and her son. In just a little while, Brandon Rood will be joining us, curator of American art, and we'll talk about the wonderful exhibit that is at the museum right now. Marcel, hello. Welcome to Milwaukee.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So when you first saw the building, when you first came to town, you thought, what? I love that building.
Well, it is almost a religious experience to go into the Calatrava building. And the first time that I came to Milwaukee, which was in March, I had the opportunity, of course, to enter the Calatrava, and it was magnificent. But honestly, what surprised me all the more about the museum, besides the fact that it has an astonishing campus, and I would count the Saarinen and the Kaler building when I say campus in that, is the collection itself, mm-hmm. which is truly stupendous, and so much so that I lost all track of time when I came to the museum, much to the chagrin of my husband, who was desperately trying to reach me for about 4 or 5 hours. And when I reemerged, the only thing I could say is, I've seen extraordinary things.
Oh,
and
nice.
Truly, it is a collection that I feel honored to serve as director.
Yeah, oh, that's a nice quote from you. I've seen extraordinary things. We will use that again. And it's also, you're coming at a time when this renovation has taken place and brought all these works that used to not be on display, given us more room for more exhibits. It truly is a wonderful renovation, I think.
I agree with you. It's done wonderful things for the museum, for the original intent, I believe, of Daniel Kaler when he designed the building. And I'm very grateful to my predecessor, Dan Keegan, because the infrastructure at the museum, particularly where the buildings and the operations, is so strong. So the luxury that provides and the excitement that provides for me and for the team moving forward is to focus on artistic vision and mission.
Mm-hmm. And that is what? What's your specific, or if you have probably many of them being in the field and having studied art history, do you have a certain mission that might be something different for the museum than what we've had?
Well, I think at this point we're in an era of really refining, recalibrating, and moving forward with a new understanding of how to activate the collection. The collection will play a starring role for us as we move forward as an institution, but also really re-envisioning the exhibition program at the museum. One of the wonderful things that's happened as a result of this recent renovation is that we now have more exhibition spaces, and we're able to really create a more dynamic, robust exhibition program that can balance different types of initiatives, different types of artists, different genres, different media over time, and really create, I think, a sense of excitement about the thought leadership that the Milwaukee Art Museum brings to interpretation of works of art.
Mm. I know that you're back background and maybe your special interest is in contemporary art. Does your interest, will that be reflected in some ways that we haven't seen at the museum? Or as director, do you have to go way beyond your specialty?
Well, I hope a bit of both, honestly. Certainly, we have a wonderful team of curators at the museum, and so they will really be my brain trust in thinking through the strategies of how to galvanize some of the work on behalf of the collection and the exhibition program. I would like to ensure, of course, that contemporary art, which is such a strong suit in the collection itself, is also receiving a lot of attention on our exhibition schedule, but not necessarily always through the display of contemporary art. We may, for example, include artists who are in the collection as interpreters of art, as individuals who can help us really dissect what's exciting about our collection in the broadest sense. And so we're looking at different strategies for how to activate not just the collection and the contemporary collection, but also artists who are part of our collecting interests.
I'm thinking about your college experience, and it's a major in art history, I believe. Isn't it interesting that you majored in art history? And I'm sure maybe some people, not your grandmother, but some people in your family may have said, art history, what are you going to do with this? And look at her now.
I think, honestly, everyone was just so relieved that I chose a major, that no one asked any questions. I had had a number of majors
Did
as
you
undergraduate.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, interesting.
I think probably about 10 in my long career at USC. And ultimately, I came into one art history class, and I knew I would never look back. Huh. I just thought, for me, it was the silver bullet of all disciplines. It was everything in one, plus the study of visual objects was so enticing in its own right that I really never looked back. But you're right. I think had my mother thought longer and harder about it, she would have asked the question.
Yeah. And tell the story of your grandmother, that for timeouts you had to stay in some part of her house and look at the corner or something for 10 minutes, and it really got you interested in looking at things carefully. Is that right?
It's true. And that really was my introduction to the world of art in many ways.
Right.
My poor grandmother, who was really bereft because I was a very disobedient child, sadly, decided that the best strategy to deal with this was to just put me in extensive timeouts in various corners of her house. The beauty of that, from my perspective, was that she chose a different corner each time, and there was usually a work of art, usually a painting, hanging in that corner. So I had this intimate experience, sometimes for extensive hours, of staring at one object at a time. And in a strange way, that's been the thread of my curatorial practice, is to be really focused on the life of objects and strong visual scrutiny and understanding mm-hmm. of not just what the work of art portrays, if it does, but what it's made of, how it functions, what decisions were made about its making that have really impacted how it operates sometimes centuries later.
Mm. So your grandmother liked art too then?
She did. She did. She was an art lover. My father was a concert pianist, and
I
also grew up with him, ironically, in communist Czechoslovakia, recording an album of Scott Joplin's Ragtimes. And so that's what I heard. His studio was right underneath my room, and so I heard him recording those wonderful melodies for most of my childhood.
Mm. So you were born in Poland, lived in Czechoslovakia, lived in Deerfield, Illinois?
Yes, and I came to Deerfield by way of Los Angeles, actually. So when I came to this country, I came to L.A., and that was quite a shock, as you can imagine, to go
How old
from...
Were you?
I was 10 when I arrived, and I didn't speak any English. And so the first task, of course, was to learn. And I was a bit resistant, I must say. I felt like I came to this country under duress. I wasn't really prepared to leave my homeland. And so I rebelled for a few weeks, and then I succumbed to the Disney Channel and reemerged 2 months later being fluent. So that's the story there.
Yeah. And you speak how many languages? I just can't imagine. I have always wanted to probably do that in my life. Some part of me wanted to, and to introduce people. I always like to say, if I find that on their resume, oh, and by the way, they speak German and Spanish and Czech and Slovak, and the list goes on. I find that just so amazing.
Well, thank you. I speak, I would say, 6.5, truly, because German,
well.
I read, but I don't speak. And I learned 3 of my first languages almost simultaneously, because in Europe, of course, the proximity of you to other cultures and other languages is very strong. And I grew up in Silesia, which is a region of Czechoslovakia, originally Poland, that was subdivided after World War II. And so I learned Polish first, but quickly thereafter Czech and Slovak. And then I came to the U.S. and learned English, then Spanish, then French, and then German.
Remarkable. Do you play the piano as well?
I do not. My father told me at an early age that I had other talents to pursue. So,
and what did he think they were?
Well, I think languages, clearly. I was also, much as my son, I think, is inherited from me, a big storyteller when I was growing up. So my parents would actually keep me in the garden sometimes for hours. I would entertain myself, and I would tell stories to the passersby as they walked by our fence. So that was the other pastime, if you will, when I was very little.
Hmm. Let's talk about exhibitions. The Milwaukee Art Museum has had some extraordinary exhibits during the time that I've been here, and now you have doubled the space. So you, at the moment, have two terrific exhibitions going on. As director, that must be a really exciting part of all of this, because you can bring to Milwaukee the best of what's in the world.
Absolutely, and that's very much what we're going to be doing in the years to come. I will say one of the things that you can also expect to see as a shift in the exhibition program is the quantity of exhibitions that we take on as traveling exhibitions to the museum versus those that we organize as curators and as scholars of art. So, for example, Brandon and I had an opportunity to meet earlier this week. We talked about a major initiative that he's working on for several years from now that I think will be a major landmark exhibition for the museum moving forward, and one of the linchpins of our program as we go forward. So we're going to be looking for opportunities that allow us to really change the field of scholarship, and that will be an important part of, I think, how we contribute as a museum, and also how our reputation will grow in our region and beyond.
Oh,
so something that can continue to be a great source of pride for the citizens of Milwaukee moving forward.
And is Brandon going to be able to tell us what that may be, or is that white? Is that secret?
We'll keep that under wraps.
But under wraps for the moment.
A cliffhanger for a little bit.
Yeah, he'll come back. Okay.
He'll definitely come back, I'm sure.
Yeah, but you said for a couple of years, and so all of this, I guess people don't realize that it takes a long time. And if you're going to have a traveling something coming here, it takes a while. But to put your own thing together and take it out takes years of planning, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah.
And we refer to it as museum time. You know, what seems like tomorrow is really a year and a half away. And many of these exhibitions take 3 to 5 years to bring to fruition from concept to implementation. So that's the kind of sightline that we need to keep at the museum. And what's wonderful about that, especially as we grow our exhibition program, is that it allows us to have a longer view at the horizon and to really think about key messages, key stories, key narratives that as a museum we're interested in exploring, and creating initiatives that over time really add nuance and add inflection to that story that we're crafting as an organization.
So you can grow the exhibition with what you have already?
Well, certainly we're going to be looking at how to better interpret our permanent collection and how to really activate the phenomenal works of art that are part of our care and our stewardship as a museum. But we're also looking at the flip side of that coin, which are exhibitions and temporary exhibitions, some of which our permanent collection may play a role either in inspiring or actually being part of. But in other cases, we may craft exhibitions that really complement our collection, that speak to areas of our artistic program that maybe our collection doesn't have representative strengths in.
Mm-hmm. So as somebody who has spent time in the hallway or wherever at your grandma's house looking at things for 10 minutes, have you had a chance to delve into the, 30,000 pieces the museum has? That's a lot. Or are you really taking your time because you need 10 minutes per picture?
Well, I probably don't have the luxury of that much time. Starting that process. And again, I'm turning to our curatorial team to help guide that process as well. And so I made reference to, for example, Brandon and I walking through the galleries together as we did earlier this week. I'll be doing that with every member of our curatorial team to really hear from them what they're excited about, which objects are really the seminal objects of the collection, how they can help us really anchor that particular area, if you will, of their collection, and how they can help us guide the exhibition program moving forward as well.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly I'll be spending a lot of time in the galleries. I'll be spending a lot of time thinking about our collection, but thankfully I also have great guides to help me in that journey.
Yes, you do. He's great. Brandon took us on a tour yesterday and it was wonderful.
Good.
You were quoted as saying when you were in Jacksonville that you helped dissolve barriers at the Jacksonville Museum for audiences who felt disenfranchised, and you hope to bridge divides in Milwaukee as well. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's interesting. In our outreach initiatives at Mocha Jacksonville, we were very successful in working particularly on questions of literacy and as they related to Title I schools and fourth graders, to speak specifically. Literacy is a key concern for art museums. It also is for the Milwaukee Art Museum as well. It has a number of hallmark initiatives contending with literacy issues. But the chain of literacy or illiteracy, if you will, has a direct link, of course, to poverty and many issues that that Milwaukee and the country as a whole face, particularly with regard to racial relations in this country. So it's something that I'm very interested in exploring. How can the museum really look at outreach opportunities where literacy is concerned? How can we help to move the needle as part of the solution? And we have to do more than just invite people in. We have to go to where they are. And so that is one of the, I think, seismic shifts that you will see over time. And it's not a shift without context. The museum has historically done a number of important outreach initiatives. And in the last, I would say, 10 to 15 years, it's been more inward-facing. And so I think it's time to really revisit that model, to think about what the community needs and where the opportunities are for us to have an important and deep impact in some of the challenges that we're facing as a community.
Oh, that's fascinating. Well, you've come to the city at the right time, as you well know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the challenges are deep. We welcome phone calls from Marcel. She'll be with us. She'll stay here for the full hour, but we also want to introduce you to Brandon, who can tell us about the current exhibit that we saw yesterday, which is absolutely terrific. And we'll meet him momentarily, but give her a welcome to Milwaukee. Marcel Poletnik is the new director of the Milwaukee Art Museum, just moved to the city with her husband and her three-year-old son. And our phone number is 800-486-8655. If you'd like to join the welcome for her, 800-486-8655. And the Facebook page, ours is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. You may want to tell her about the parts of the museum that you find particularly terrific and the exhibits that are important to the city. How many of those, is that 30,000 that the Milwaukee Art Museum has as a whole? Do you have a lot of things in the basement somewhere?
Well, we certainly have things in storage, as most museums do. We're fortunate in that we can display a significant part of our collection, but clearly the collection is very deep, and that'll be a part of the fun for me as I start to explore not only what's on view in the galleries, but what else we can mine that perhaps isn't on view as we look to the museum's future.
Mm-hmm. And getting new pieces for the museum, is that something that the director does, and how do you do that?
Well, again, in concert with the curatorial team and also a number of other key constituents, whether it's trustees, whether it's our registration team, our conservation team, we do evaluate collecting priorities and, of course, acquire works for the permanent collection, and that's an ongoing process.
The other thing that I've always thought, you've been admiring the fact that we have windows in the studio, and that's unusual for a radio station. It is very, I can't work in a place without windows. It's really nice to have windows. I'm sorry, Madison people who work in Madison, because I know you don't have windows, but come see us anytime. But there, and I've said this before to people I know who've worked at the museum, to be able to go into that building every day to work, what a place to be able to walk into and do your job during a day, isn't it?
It's very inspiring.
I bet.
It is. And it truly feels like an honor and privilege every day. And just a couple of days ago, I actually watched the Burke Brise Soleil open for the first time at 10 o'clock. And it really is a very moving experience, the way that it really encircles the city and welcomes everyone in. So very excited to be here.
Yeah. And you also are returning to the Midwest, not that you're not
Absolutely.
A person of the world here, Lee, but you have a lot of familiarity with Illinois.
Very much so, and think very fondly of my time there. In fact, the Art Institute is really the first museum that I visited as a high schooler on my own and discovered, so I'm very happy to be back in the Midwest.
Yeah, there is something about the Midwest that, as we will find out with Thomas Hart Benton, too, who is a Midwestern kind of guy, there's something that's endearing, and that it draws you back, I think.
Absolutely.
After you've lived in different parts of the world. Our number is 800-486-8655, and let's start calls with Mary. Oh, you're going to need earphones, yeah. Mary in Wauwatosa is joining us. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for letting me speak.
Sure, Mary.
I have a suggestion for Museum, and that is that the last time I was in the Calatrava area, that new wing that they built, there was nothing hanging on the walls. And it occurred to me while I was standing there that obviously you can't hang the art from the museum in there because of the light would affect it. But why not let local artists hang their work there and sell it, and then use a percentage of the sales, go back to the, obviously a percentage of the sales goes to the artist, but another percentage goes to the museum as a fundraising effort.
It's a very interesting suggestion. You know, one of the aspects that I'm looking forward to the most as director of the museum is really getting to know the local artist community. So I appreciate the fact that you've expressed a desire to be engaged, as perhaps you are also an artist, in the museum's program. And that's certainly something that that I know I and the curators of the museum are always contemplating. The beauty of the Calatrava, to my mind, is the fact that it is the amalgam of architecture and art. Mm-hmm. Really coming together. And the purity of that experience is what makes it so extraordinary. So again, I think as someone who's new to the community and certainly new to the building itself, I'm interested in spending time with it too and understanding how it unfolds as a structure, how it really operates throughout the day, and how people visit it. You know, what do they count on when they come to the Calatrava building specifically? Is it that wide open expanse that looks out onto the lake? Is it the way that you have a bit of a respite before you enter the galleries, that you're able to really encircle and enfold yourself in the architecture? So I think that over the next few months, I'll have a chance to really experience that myself, and also to hear from our team and to hear from the community how they relate to it. So this is very helpful to me to hear your suggestion, also to hear how you're thinking of it as, you know, as a community space, which is certainly our intent at the museum. We want everyone in the community to see it as their living room on the lake, if you will. And so I look forward to seeing you at the museum and all the conversations that will follow, no doubt.
Thanks, Mary, very much for the call. Are you an artist as well?
No, I'm not. I wish. Unfortunately, that's not my proclivity, but I always think of as art history and being an art historian as a really an artistic endeavor, because what you're doing is essentially learning the language of a particular artist and then translating that language to the public. And so there's, as in every translation, there's room for interpretation and there's room for artistry.
Mm-hmm. You know, the only D I ever got in my life was in art in seventh grade. And I can't believe that somebody gave me a D in art. That's a terrible thing to do. And so it's like the Harry Chapin song, Mrs. Tanner. Remember that? It was Mrs. Tanner was a dream of being an opera star, and then the Times gives her terrible reviews and she never sings again. And I feel that I got a D in art, and so I never drew again, although I did try to take watercolor. But it's okay now. I'm past seventh grade, as I well should be. But I think that I have a good sense of what's striking to me, what really it mm-hmm. strikes my soul. And there is something about art that's really good, and all variety of art, that it doesn't make a difference if you can't draw yourself. You can just really be taken by it.
I agree. And I think having an appreciation and having a deep appreciation for works of art is an important part of the equation, because of course artists are interested in publics that also understand what they're trying to accomplish and how they communicate. Yeah. And so that's very important. That's something that we want to nurture and nourish at the museum.
Yeah, you're going to be great. You're going to be terrific. We're going to pause for just a moment and we'll return. Stay with us for this hour. Phone calls are welcome for the new director of the Milwaukee Art Museum, who really just arrived, just very, very recently. Marcel Polednik is the director. She comes here from most recently Jacksonville, where she was director of the Museum of Contemporary Art there. We are going to be speaking with Brandon Rood here in a moment, because he is curator of American art at the Milwaukee Art Museum and knows a whole lot about Thomas Hart Benton. And there's an exhibit, if you haven't seen it yet, it's wonderful, American Epics, Thomas Hart Benton and Hollywood. So we will be talking to Brandon about that exhibit and welcoming your phone calls. Love to hear from some of you who have seen that exhibit. Our phone number remaining, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Brendan Rood is with us now. He's creator of American art at the Milwaukee Art Museum and took us through the Thomas Hart Benton and Hollywood exhibit, which is going to be there for a little while longer. Thomas Hart Benton, a totally fascinating character, And we're just delighted to have you here, Brendan. Thank you for the tour, and thanks for being with us.
Oh, great to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's funny how things are serendipitous in sometimes in life. I didn't know very much about Thomas Hart Benton, but I was at the Met visiting our family in New York, and there was Thomas Hart Benton, and I'd never been to that part of the Met. And then I came home, and I saw these posters in Milwaukee, Thomas Hart Benton, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is wonderful. It's funny how things happen like that, but it's a great exhibit, and a part of his life that was important to him, and he was important in the American art world, and in the political world, too.
Absolutely. Right on both accounts, he was probably one of the most famous artists of the previous century. For those who are not familiar with him and don't recognize the name Benton, he did come from an illustrious political family, a family of Missouri politicians. His great uncle and namesake was a U.S. senator and very involved in the formation of the political ideology of the state of Missouri. His father was a congressman. So he was very kind of caught up in politics and part of American history, which I believe really led him on the path to want to paint American history, scenes of everyday life, really capture the American spirit, the American essence. And he entered people's homes in so many ways through the exhibitions of his paintings in galleries and museums, of course, and many murals in public buildings, but also through books, illustrations, many of which were even sold for $5 at department stores, through the advertising he did for movies as the exhibition explores, through even television and interviews that he did, and record albums. He was almost ubiquitous in the previous century.
He played the harmonica, too, didn't he?
He read did, somewhere. And his son was a musician, and they collaborated an album of music, Saturday Night at Tom Benton's. And
I love the whole exhibit, but I was really struck, and maybe I've seen them before somewhere, it's in the recesses of my mind, his whole involvement in World War II effort to get people to sign up, yeah, and these huge pictures of, yeah, Nazis who scare the heck out of you.
Yeah, that I think is some of the toughest subject matter in the exhibition, really violent and inflammatory images. And you're absolutely right. He wanted to encourage and inspire Americans to get involved in the war effort. So they were meant to be polemical. They were meant to be inflammatory, to encourage people. And also to put them in context, this was a moment when many artists were afraid, many Americans, but many artists afraid of fascism. And there was even an artist organization devoted to fighting fascism, raising money to support freedom fighters in Spain, to fight the threat of German fascism, and what was perceived as its eventual and perhaps ultimate spread across the world. And that's kind of the arena Thomas Hart Benton is coming out of, this great fear of fascism, and he wanted to really create these very inflammatory murals to inspire people to get involved in the war effort. Mm-hmm. And in context of the exhibition, looking at Thomas Hart Benton's career and involvement with Hollywood and popular culture and entertainment, it's also some of the more salacious, if you will, and pulp imagery that he ever created. He was also looking at B-movies in particular for the imagery. He was looking at comic books, Superman in particular. He was watching vampire movies.
Really?
And you can really see those when you're looking at them.
Yeah. You talked about him as being a regionalist, and there were other artists that you talk about being in that category. What does that mean, to be a regionalist?
Regionalism was the antidote, if you will, to the perceived excesses of European modernism. Thomas Hart Benton came of age at a moment in the early 20th century when all artists traveled to Europe, and especially Paris, for extended training. Benton himself did it, but when he returned, he began to find his artistic footing. and began to explore more everyday subjects, scenes from American life, realist subjects. And these were kind of out of the mainstream of what American artists were turning to. If you think of Cubism or Picasso and modernism, and with a capital M, and Benton announced himself as the enemy of modernism, that he was going to focus on the everyday, the actual American people. And so by the 1920s, 1930s, you had a group of artists, not originally a cohesive group, but began to focus on scenes from everyday life, agricultural, rural scenes. And there spread a movement in the Midwest, in particular, that devoted itself to these particular subjects. And it was led by three people: Grant Wood in Iowa, famous for his American Gothic, of course, right here in Wisconsin, John Stuart Curry, and Thomas Hart Benton in Missouri. And the three of them really established regionalism as an artistic force, as this answer, this response to European modernism, something that was purely American and really focused on American subjects and, to them, an American style. Mm.
And what causes were near and dear to his heart?
Well, he had a strong sense of social justice. I think, kind of going back to your earlier question and comment about the World War II, the Year of Peril murals that you see in the exhibition, and this kind of fear of fascism, wanting to have a kind of a political activism that you originally talked about, growing up in this political family. He had a strong sense of social justice. He devoted himself to subjects ranging from responses and campaigns against racism, against lynching. He also devoted subjects to the labor movement, to support of workers and workers' rights. Another part of his World War II effort was to encourage the desegregation of the armed services. So he really did have a strong sense of social justice and of being involved in the political situation.
So life commissioned him to go to Hollywood to do what?
Life commissioned Benton in 1937 to go to Hollywood, and they wanted a pictorial essay on Hollywood to put in the pages of their magazine. Benton, by 1937, he had left New York by this time. He had returned to his home state of Missouri, settled in Kansas City, and he was a famous artist. And so who better than to have this great artist who was so known for his realist figurative paintings to provide an image of Hollywood for Life magazine. He spent several months there. Because he was a famous artist, he had unfettered access to the studios, the backlots, the executives. And he spent months creating small sketches that he turned into more complete drawings and created, as you mentioned, this great painting, Hollywood, that Life magazine ultimately rejected. And they rejected it because they didn't feel it showed Hollywood to be glamorous enough. They wanted the myth. They wanted the dream factory, the starlet, getting off the bus from Iowa and being discovered and becoming a great movie star.
Don't we all, right?
And his paintings showed the mechanics of Hollywood, the backlot, the sound operators, the camera operators, the lights, the starlets in their dressing rooms with their feet up, putting on their makeup, the movies being filmed, everything involved in the production of film versus what Hollywood wanted you to see. Again, that kind of great myth and dream factory.
Yeah. And he had some harsh thoughts about Hollywood, didn't he? That it was, you know, money-making kind of thing, selling sex, selling...
He did. He famously said, I am no fan of Hollywood. I know nothing of Hollywood. I don't really pay attention to the movies or the celebrity or gossip magazines. And yet, at the same time, Thomas Hart Benton, as you would see in the exhibition, is a very complicated individual.
Right, right.
And much of his bread and butter was from Hollywood, not just this Life magazine pictorial, but he later received commissions from Hollywood studios and from directors to help advertise and promote their films. The most famous is going to be The Grapes of Wrath. He did the promotion for that in 1940, and then a couple decades later for the film The Kentuckian, directed by, produced by, and starring Burt Lancaster. So he had let's say, an uneasy relationship with Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. And he's done public buildings because of his political background, or he did the Truman Library?
I would say politics was very much involved in his murals, again, because I think it was his childhood being so immersed in that world right. that probably interested him in the subjects he depicted. You mentioned the America Today murals at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, a great series and among his earliest commissions for originally a building in New York. And then based on that, he was able to secure commissions for many public buildings, and being the artist from Missouri, who better than to represent the history of the state of Missouri than Thomas Hart Benton, whether at the Truman Library or in the State House. But you can travel the country and find Benton murals in New York, and not just New York City, but in dams that were built in the public buildings there, and in banks, and in state houses, and post offices. And now today at the Met in New York, the America Today murals, of course, removed from their original location because they were deteriorating and saved and given as a great gift to the
And
museum.
He also, it seemed to me as though he could have been a sculptor. And you see that just when you see his paintings, you think the way that he's created the human beings, the muscles, and almost Michelangelo-like in a different way, but very sinewy. And when you look at the clay sculptures, there's one of them that you have in the exhibit. I wonder if he could have gone that route. But tell us the story of all those sculptures. He was doing things three-dimensionally first?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. Thanks for bringing that up, because it's such a great part and another major part of Benton's relationship with Hollywood and with filmmaking. You're right, he could have gone the direction of sculpture, but the only sculptures he made were three-dimensional models, what we call maquettes, these clay models for his paintings. And this is something he picked up through studio designers. Benton, early in his career, worked in the motion picture industry in Fort Lee, New Jersey, the site of what was then America's original Hollywood before it moved to Los Angeles. He painted backdrops, designed scenery, and it really influenced his outlook as an artist. And part of the production of a Hollywood movie was the design, the creation of the set, originally in a small plaster or wood model. Benton picked up this technique, which many writers, critics, and authors encouraged artists to do based on the advent and increasing popularity of film. And if you think about it, he created these for most of the two-dimensional paintings he ultimately executed.
A lot of work.
Well, he was a prolific artist. And so not just the small canvas paintings you might see in galleries or at the museum, but also for all the public murals. So these even large-scale clay models, but highly detailed as many of Benton's paintings are. He would then experiment with light and color, casting shadows. How would this work? In much the same way that, again, direct or studio designers might experiment with lighting on these and then committed it to canvas. And you can really see that in the paintings, even the more abstract ones in the exhibition, this sense of color, very high-keyed, mm-hmm. saturated color, the lighting, it's almost projected from behind. And especially the early paintings, you get a sense of how he was designing and painting these backdrops, how they had to appear in silent black and white films, be all the more readable to an audience in the way his early canvases from the 1920s
yeah.
really read.
Yeah. Have you seen the exhibit, Marcel?
I have.
What do you think of it?
I think it's extraordinary.
It's
a wonderful amalgam of really looking at an artist through multiple dimensions, multiple lenses, if you will. And it's just the kind of thing that I hope we'll be doing more of, which is really to bring paintings, drawings, sculpture, film together and really show that artists seldom work in one medium, mm. whether it's early 20th century or certainly today.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was it's the first large-scale look at his work in 20 years or 25 mm-hmm. years? Is it 20?
Yeah, it's been about 25 years
wow.
since there was a large-scale retrospective of Thomas Hart Benton's work, and so that it's being shown here in Milwaukee and at the Milwaukee Art Museum, and that we are also a contributor to the exhibition in terms of the loans from many of the museums, including the Met that we secured, but also the clay models that Benton produced that we were just talking about are so rare. There are only about half a dozen known extant ones, and one is right here in Milwaukee at the Milwaukee Amazing. Art Museum, and so that we have this opportunity to really explore, like Marcel was saying, the various dimensions of an artist and how they worked across media.
Yeah, it's valuable to see that.
Yeah.
And you were saying that it's so precious that it can't leave the museum, and then there's a little tiny picture of a painting that's based on that's at Yale, and that can't leave Yale, so
exactly.
we can't get them together,
it's,
right?
It's the terrible irony of the situation. If you have been to the exhibition, it is a very fragile piece on cardboard. Benton did not intend these necessarily to be exhibited in museums or as art. He used them as preparatory to his paintings and then often destroyed them. And so that this one is preserved and almost pristinely preserved is really nothing short of a miracle. And that it ended up in a museum so we can continue to study and appreciate it. But because of its fragility, no, it can't leave the building, unfortunately. And you're absolutely right. The companion painting in the Yale University Art Gallery is on a very coarse canvas that is itself deteriorating, and it can't leave the building. So uniting these two pieces, unfortunately, can't be done.
It's all right. We had a good part of it.
I have to do it in reproduction.
Yeah. If you want to join the conversation, feel free to do so. I'm particularly interested. I don't know if any of you who have seen the exhibit are listening right now, but I would assume a few of you are, to get your response to the American Epics Thomas Hart Benton and Hollywood exhibit, which continues until September 5, is that right?
That's correct.
So if you haven't seen it, you have a little while yet to see it. Brandon Rood is the Abert Family Curator of the American Art at the Milwaukee Art Museum, and he came from another Midwestern place, the Sheldon Museum of Art at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, where he had been curator of American art. And we're also delighted to have in our studio the brand new director of the Milwaukee Art Museum, who has just moved to town, Marcel Polednik. She comes here from Jacksonville, and she's outlined her vision of her future with the Milwaukee Art Museum, the first part of our show. So here's how you join us, however you'd like to join us, 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now. You can call. You don't have to, but if you want to, 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. Kate in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I have seen the exhibit, and I just accidentally found it and was thrilled. So it's just wonderful, and I want to tell everybody to go see it.
Oh, great. Thank you very much.
I had a question. When I saw the paintings, I realized that I had this image in my head of something that was in my grade school textbook, and it was of a large gear in kind of blue-gray and a man standing next to it.
A deer, did you say?
A deer.
A deer.
D-E-A-R, like an industrial manufacturing setting.
Mm-hmm.
And I have now contacted the museum, and they directed me to a website which has a zillion museums with this work. And I'm wondering, is there one place I could go and try to find this, or does this even sound familiar to you?
Does anybody know, Brandon?
You're talking about a photograph, I assume?
No, it was a painting, but it was in my grade school textbook in the 50s.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, I'm not familiar exactly with the painting. You don't know the name of the artist, or
was it Benton?
It was Thomas Hart Benton.
Oh, so it was Thomas Hart Benton, and it was an image of a gear
and a man standing next to it. I'm thinking maybe he did a series on manufacturing or industry or something, and I've searched on those.
It's interesting. You've been listening to the program, and Kathleen brought up the America Today murals, and those were all about American industry.
Right, right.
He was showcasing the different regions of America, and in particular, the manufacturing regions. And I wonder if you looked that up online, if you would see anything related to that, because that's going to be, I think, to my mind, most output Benton did showing machinery and industry.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks very much for your call, Kate. Vicki in Appleton, hi.
Hi. I'm calling because I have often, I I really enjoy Thomas Hart Benton.
Good.
But I have seen Russian art of about the same time, I think, that are these heroic figures. Was there an international, was this a sort of an international style at the time?
I wouldn't say that there was a particular international style related to it. As we'd been talking about on the show, Benton was kind of working outside initially the mainstream of most international art movements, eventually did gain traction in the 30s, 40s via regionalism. I think because he was working in a figurative style and he was working in one that was meant to be so readable to a large number of people, to the average American or public who might go into a building or look at a book cover and see these, there is kind of similarities in these styles, and especially as we were talking about earlier with the propagandistic paintings, the World War II ones. I think anything that is meant to inspire or inflame people in such a way is going to have kind of a very similar effect and tone. So if you're kind of looking across propagandistic paintings, whether it is American or Soviet, there's going to be some similarities in the way the artist addresses the subject and the style used.
Thanks, Vicki, for the call. Angie in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Angie.
Oh, hi. I am calling just to say welcome to Marcel.
Thank you.
And very glad you're here. And just to comment and then a question. And the comment was Friday evening down at the lakefront, it was supercharged because the activity at NAMM above the Friday at NAMM with all the color and incredible density of people moving and whatever upstairs, and then the very calm, almost like candlelit image from down below with a few people dining, and that would have been a picture in itself. Mm-hmm. And then the Irish Fest, the music was just amazing.
what an amalgam, yes.
to cap it all off. But I was in Jacksonville a few months ago, too, and I didn't get to the Art Museum, but I know it has had its challenges, too, maybe a little microcosm of Milwaukee. But I was just intrigued by what you might have done, Marcel, in Jacksonville that you thought might work here, or how you might expand on that in Milwaukee in terms of reaching out into the community. The Kohl's vans, which are something I know go on right now.
It's a great question, and I'm very glad you brought it up. So specifically, there are a couple different things that I'd like to talk about, one of which is part of the education effort of MoCA Jacksonville. And it's a program that really was started by MoCA Jacksonville, but I think has opportunities in many other markets, and certainly something I would want to think about in relation to Milwaukee, and obviously change and fine-tune for this community. The museum has a program called Voice of the People, which, as I mentioned, is a fourth grade literacy program in which it works with several grades or several classes of fourth graders, all Title I schools, meaning that the majority of the students who are attending are eligible for reduced or free lunch, so high poverty rates as nationally defined. And what we do, what the museum does in those schools is, in fact, start at meaningful relationship with the teachers and with the principal. That's always how it starts. And eventually, through many years, and it's been running now for 7 or 8 years, we take over not the art time that the students receive, if they do, but actually their reading, writing, composition time. Mm. And what happens is the students visit the museum, many for the first time, and they do so repeatedly over the course of a semester. They choose a work of art from the permanent collection, and then over the course of the semester, they write an audio guide for that object.
Nice.
So they're learning about art, certainly. They're learning about an object from the collection. They're learning expository writing skills, no doubt. They're also learning new vocabulary. And then at the end of the process, they record those audio guides. And so they work with professional artists from the community, spoken word artists in particular, many of whom came from the same background, who really talk to them about the path forward and opportunities that lie ahead, and create some very meaningful relationships with those young students. They record the audio guides. The museum hosts an open house for their families. And then all the audio guides become live, and any person who comes to the museum can listen to the audio guides that were recorded by those students.
Wonderful.
Sometimes the reactions are very positive. Sometimes, you know, the students are asked to choose a work of art that they can really live with for 5 months. And sometimes the audio guides, quite frankly, are a little bit rude. But the point is to empower the students to have opinions about art and to be able to express them fully.
Yeah.
So that's one example.
And it could change their lives. That's a great program. Thank you both so much for being with us. Everybody decided to call at the last minute, so there are other questions. I'm going to ask you to stay. We got two questions for you. Can you stay for 2 minutes,
sure.
Brandon? All right, so we'll have him answer off the air because they're about the exhibit. Our thanks very much to Scotty Myers for producing this. Our thanks to Marcel Palednik, the new director of the Milwaukee Art Museum, Brandon Rood, who is the curator of American art and knows a whole lot about the Thomas Hart Benton Museum. Now on until
September
5th. Thank you. Thanks very much. We're with you again tomorrow, and so I hope you'll join us.